undefined feeling in turn, besides manifesting itself as superstition or erroneous notions, when it appears as an expression of the borderland of the explosion stage, meaning an area where the energy of feeling is mixed with great quantities of the energy of gravity. Without this, however, being powerful enough to produce explosions constantly, will also manifest itself in the form of such primitive thought climates as hate, jealousy, avarice, envy, dishonesty, lust for power, and intolerance. These thought climates will thus be an expression of the energy of feeling influenced by slightly suppressed energy of gravity. As these thought climates or natures are thus an expression of primitive feeling, they are, in the case of the terrestrial human being, older than his intelligence. They therefore together constitute the leading elements of his consciousness in his daily manifestation or existence. Since terrestrial mankind as a whole consists mainly of such individuals, it is really these natures that govern terrestrial human society. So this society is still governed not by a real or completely developed intelligence but by primitive feeling. Egoism, thirst for power, ambition and intolerance will thus to a great extent prevail. Chapter 39, Terrestrial Mankind as a Theater of War. But, as these factors can be satisfied only on the basis of the oppression and degradation of the fellow beings of the source of these factors, terrestrial mankind as a whole will in reality be identical with a theater of war whose combating sides or armies can be expressed as continents, religions, races, nations, provinces, municipalities, parties, unions, sects, families, spouses, parents and children, man against man and woman against woman. Indeed, we must follow this world conflagration right down to the thought world of each single individual before we come to the bedrock or point of origin of the fight. Here thoughts rage against thoughts, and energies against energies, eliciting the aforesaid small explosions whose further development becomes the fuel for the gigantic all-embracing fire that, in the form of oppression, poverty, sickness, destitution and demoralization, devours the entire earth. Do not think that anyone is free. Every human being who succumbs to the tiniest trace of superstition, intolerance, thirst for power, greed or dishonesty is an enlisted soldier in the army corps of the aforesaid world conflagration, is a party to hunting, wounding and killing, is a party to plundering, torturing and degrading, no matter how many beautiful, noble ideals he or she might otherwise harbor. Of course, the good aspects of the individual's consciousness should not be belittled or underrated. These contribute to creating the great counterbalance to the world conflagration to which I will later return. But no one can be totally acquitted of being a directly contributing cause of the evil or disharmony in the social system as long as he or she has the tiniest trace of these thought climates that promote the world conflagration. Chapter 40, Love Comes into Being. As mankind thus lives in disharmony with the laws of life and so inflicts upon itself great difficulties and sufferings, the faculty of feeling of the individuals is trained and developed. They achieve a so much wider outlook in the area of the experiences of feeling that it is ultimately not only in the area of coarse feelings and sickness that they are able to feel, but also in areas of nuances of feeling of far finer dimensions. This refined faculty of feeling manifests itself as sympathy for other beings who are suffering, as the need to help, as the need to be something for others and so on, just as the individual in question begins not to be able to kill animals, begins not to have the heart to do any living being harm, begins to be able to tolerate insult, begins to appreciate nature and its riches in the form of living beings, people, animals, plants and minerals. Such a feeling is the beginning of love or life's highest energy of pleasure. The energy of feeling cannot, however, be completely pure love until it has become controlled or supported by a certain amount of the energy of intelligence. Intelligence, as previously mentioned, is necessary to make the individual become conscious of the details in his experiences and manifestations of feeling, or to realize their real nature. If the intelligence is not sufficiently developed, the individual can guide his feeling only by means of his instinct or his faculty to sense vaguely. As this faculty is degenerating, the individual, when he should guide his feeling by means of this, can easily inflict unfortunate accidents on his fellow beings even though his actions are motivated by exceptional sympathy. In other words, the individual cannot possibly act correctly as long as his intellectual faculty is not sufficiently developed for him to achieve an intelligent overview of his own behavior, and he can therefore only act in accordance with vague and therefore uncertain motives based on degenerated instinct. Suffering thus develops feeling, but feeling has therefore to be controlled by a perfect intelligence before it can become really sensible. If not, the old adage "love is blind" will apply. Love without common sense is not love but only uncontrolled and therefore primitive feeling. Chapter 41, when the great commandment "love one another" becomes science besides the sufferings, which refine feeling, the development of intelligence will thus be one aspect of the one thing needful in the liberation of terrestrial mankind from the animal kingdom or darkness. And it is accordingly the result of this development that today appears as identical to science. When feeling becomes sufficiently refined through suffering, and when science creates analyses of this refinement, then the eternal commandment or the fulfillment of the law "love one another" becomes a fact for terrestrial mankind. Then mankind is no longer ruled by lower instincts and primitive intelligence, but rules the world by virtue of the Holy Spirit, which at that time will be an all-out shining factor in the daily life of the zones of the earth. Chapter 42, an imperfect and primitive social system. The reader has now come so far in the subject matter of this book as to have become acquainted with the fact that terrestrial mankind as a whole consists mainly of individuals whose standard of evolution is such that their daily manifestations are dictated or controlled more by primitive tendencies of consciousness than by perfect love, meaning perfect feeling and intelligence. As primitive tendencies of consciousness manifest themselves mainly in hate, envy, greed, bloodthirstiness, intolerance, overweening ambition and so on, and as the effects of these tendencies represent a perfect contrast to the realities that are the sole basis for an absolutely perfect social system, so the present fate of terrestrial mankind will of necessity manifest itself in a correspondingly primitive or abnormal and imperfect social system. All terrestrial mankind is, as previously mentioned, a theater of war, everyone hunts, wounds and kills. A fate representing such a condition can only be identical with the culmination of suffering. But as suffering develops feeling and intelligence to such a state of reciprocal harmony that these ultimately appear together as absolute love, love will gradually become the basis on which the reciprocal organization of terrestrial human society will come to rest and thereby be in contact with the eternal commandment that is the fulfillment of all the laws. As love is in reality identical with the combination of the highest feeling and intelligence plus intuition, and as such a combination is in turn the same as the Holy Spirit, and as the present terrestrial science is this spirit in embryo, this science will thus become the dawning governing and administrative factor in the future social system of terrestrial mankind. Here one must remember that even if science to a certain extent appears as light, it is still inferior to the primitive tendencies of consciousness and is therefore all too much a servant of these tendencies. It is the control by the primitive tendencies of consciousness of intelligence or of science that has been able to produce such realities as torpedoes, machine guns, grenades, poison gas or, in brief, all possible forms of the ingenious promotion of the explosive capacity of the energy of gravity or the killing principle. Developed feeling and intelligence will, to an equally tremendous extent, release ingeniousness in the promoting of the life-giving principle, which thus means love or absolute happiness. As science, which means the intellect of terrestrial mankind as a whole, will thus gradually become so perfect that it will liberate itself from being the obedient servant of these primitive tendencies of consciousness and so become the all-out shining basis for society, without which an absolute harmony or lasting peace cannot possibly be built up. I will now proceed to conclude with a short outline of the factors that, on the basis of this, are already developing rapidly and under the coming scientific government described above will to a great degree come to prevail. Chapter 43. The nations constitute a world kingdom without a government or sovereign authority. Internationalism is thus developing very rapidly. It has, through the technical evolution of means of communication, such as railways, steamships and aircraft, telephones, telegraphy and radio, so reduced distances that peoples in the various continents have become neighbors, living next door to one another, talking to one another, doing business and exchanging goods, discussing common likes and dislikes and so on. In the form of international trading companies, leagues of every sort, peace organizations and unions, all the states and nations are so tightly bound together that the undermining or downfall of a single state cannot possibly take place without being an inconvenience to all the other states. In other words, internationalism is already so widespread or pronounced that the nations around the planet are in reality no longer isolated, independent states but provinces in an international world kingdom spanning the entire earth. But this kingdom has still one great obstacle to overcome before it becomes perfect, for it is a kingdom quite without government or sovereign authority. As government or authority is the same as protection by law and justice, the terrestrial international world kingdom is thus today quite devoid of law and justice. However, a kingdom that is without law and justice represents no protection for the single individual or inhabitants. They must therefore defend themselves as far as their strength allows. The result is that the strongest individuals have the power. As the strongest individuals are, however, not always the most just or moral, but often the most egoistic, it is might and not right that is the ruling factor. The inhabitants of this kingdom, which means the nations or states, can therefore do just as they like with the power they have at their disposal. This in turn means that an inhabitant, nation, must be armed. We see this arming in the form of its army, navy and air force. The inhabitant that has a superior war organization has a corresponding power to oppress and exploit the other inhabitants, nations. The social system of the terrestrial international world kingdom is therefore at a stage analogous to that of Stone Age man. But just as evolution led the reciprocal relations of the people of the Stone Age forward to constitute civilized nations, so will evolution also lead the reciprocal relations of the nations from this Stone Age level forward to an intellectual, humane and absolutely justly governed world kingdom. Chapter 44, The United Nations as the Embryo of an Incipient World Government or World Authority. Just as there cannot be ordered relations within a society of individuals without a government, equally there cannot be ordered relations within a community of nations as long as this society is without a legal and judicial system and without a government. Evolution has also already begun the formation of the embryo of such a government or authority. This embryo appears to us in daily life as identical with the manifestation of the United Nations. This reality is an incipient international legal and judicial system. But this judicial system is today without a police force to safeguard its interests. And a legal and judicial system without police will, as we know, not mean anything to those who break the law. Neither does the power of the United Nations yet mean anything more than a shadow of what it will come to mean for any criminals, nations, on which it has to pass judgment today. Particularly as these criminals have the right to carry weapons, army and navy. One can imagine a similar case in the ordinary daily practice of justice, an unarmed judge confronted with a criminal who is armed to the teeth. This can only be a parody of what it should be. But just as the legal and judicial system of the nations will gradually forbid individuals to carry weapons and allow detected unruliness to be settled only by the weapons of justice, so will evolution also result in the legal and judicial system of the world kingdom gradually becoming the only armed power in the world, while all militarism will be prohibited in the individual states. Just as a nation cannot achieve orderly or civilized relations without police, so of course neither can the world kingdom become civilized before it has got its world police. Chapter 45, National Selfishness and Unselfishness. All the people of the earth are thus on the way to achieving a common fatherland. And when the world kingdom has progressed so far as to constitute one common fatherland for all individuals, and all nations have become provinces in this same kingdom, internationalism or common interest will have conquered nationalism. This in turn really means that unselfishness will have conquered selfishness. Internationalism is the unselfishness of a nation, and nationalism is the selfishness or egoism of a nation. The world kingdom will from the outset, as it spans the whole earth, have the advantage over ordinary states or nations that it cannot have exterior enemies. It cannot therefore have dangerous or hostile border areas on which it has to build strong forts, produce poisonous gases or nuclear weapons, build tanks or military equipment. Equally, it cannot have any difficulties with passports, customs or exchange of currencies. Everyone is an inhabitant of the same kingdom, everyone is under the same government. Chapter 46, The World Government Consisting of the Most Noble Representatives of Science. As internationalism, which we have seen means unselfishness, must prevail in the world before the government of this kingdom is a fact, the same government would of course only be able to exist as a result or product of unselfishness. But, as unselfishness cannot prevail or become an authority and thereby of universal validity before it is a science, neither could the world government become any real authority without consisting of scientists in the area of unselfishness. This government will thereby come to differ from present and past governments of the nations, since their members to a great extent are authorities only in the national and so in the selfish area. This selfishness is not of course necessarily true of their own personalities, but rather of the particular political party they each represent. The members of governments and parliaments within the governments of the ordinary states are thus in reality in many cases not champions of the common good, but rather champions of the advantage of their particular party and its appropriation of public assets, regardless of whether these advantages are undermining or degrading other parties within the state. But this is because selfishness in these beings predominates over their intellect, and their intelligence is therefore far too much used as a tool for selfishness. In other words, the representatives of selfishness have more power than the representatives of intellect and science. When science becomes so advanced that its representatives are the champions of unselfishness, these champions will be the only existing beings on earth having the necessary qualifications to be able to fulfill the requirements that determine the basis for the complete control of the dawning international world kingdom by the Holy Spirit, and thereby the maintenance of a real peace on earth. And devolution will then also result in the fact that the members of the government of this world kingdom, even though chosen by the people, can be recruited or selected only from the highest and most noble areas of science in all fields, material as well as spiritual. Chapter 47, The Essence of Mankind's Evolution and Fate in 12 Points. As I must refer the reader to Leavitt's Bog, where a more detailed description of the coming world government and its results is given, I will, through the following quotation from that book, convey only the essence of the fate or present epoch of evolution of terrestrial mankind. This essence can be conveyed in the following 12 points. 1. The victory of unselfishness over selfishness in all forms, the victory of common interest over private interest. 2. The creation of an international, democratic world government. 3. The disarmament of all countries and the establishment of an international, impartial world police force. 4. The development of an international, undisguised, not secret, supreme system of law and justice represented by science's most eminent people in spiritual as well as in material fields, who will be qualified to know the difference between abnormal actions and crimes, having knowledge of the course of evolution and the eternal laws of life, which would thus guarantee absolute justice for everyone and everything. 5. The abolition of the possession by private individuals of valuable goods and their appropriation by the world state. 6. The abolition of money and the establishment of the personally rendered work of the individual as the only means of payment for him. 7. The establishment of one fund for childhood, old age and illness, covering the whole of the world state and founded on the basis of deductions from work receipts. 8. The use of machines for shortening material working hours, and the replacement of these working hours by days for study and spiritual research. 9. The abolition of bloodshed and policies of violence. 10. The abolition of torture, corporal and capital punishment, and their replacement by expert arrangements for detention and education. 11. The development of vegetarian food, of health and the care of the physical body, and of light, healthy housing. 12. The development of intellectual liberty, tolerance, humaneness and love to all living beings, to people and animals, to plants and to minerals. These 12 points are thus identical with the realities around which the entire terrestrial human energy for revolution will be concentrated and under which the fulfillment of existence's highest commandment of love, love one another, on the basis of the new cosmic world impulse, will now approach its perfect release in the daily existence of the terrestrial human being. These 12 points are thus not a complicated speculation worked out by the brain or a hypothesis but, on the contrary, an expression of the analysis of a true fact that has come to expression in thought only on the basis of previous actual experiences. No terrestrial human being will therefore be able to exist without being in contact with these realities or being surrounded by these energies. Being in tune with these energies, or the 12 points mentioned, is thus the same as being in harmony with the divine world plan. It means being a stimulating factor in the creation of world peace on Earth, and it is the quickest way for every terrestrial human being to the great birth or the attainment of a transfigured existence. Being against the 12 points or energies means, on the other hand, being in disharmony with the energies of the universe, being against the essence of the religions of the world. It means that one is a hindrance to the liberation of terrestrial mankind from the dark areas of war and suffering, whereby one makes oneself an undermining factor in one's own absolute happiness. But, since the energies from the light radiation of the divine principle of creation, the principle that, among other things, has given rise to the religions of the world, have long ago become a dominating factor in the evolution of terrestrial mankind and have therefore established as a fact that mankind evolves from the animal kingdom to the human kingdom and not vice versa, and since this evolution can take place absolutely only on the basis of the fulfillment of the great commandment love one another, and since this fulfillment in turn, according to the divine world plan, as far as the terrestrial human being is concerned, can be released only in the form of the previously mentioned realities or points, the evolution of these and the creation of a divine world kingdom resting on these will here be visible as an absolute reality. The great events that in the present century are sweeping over the world are therefore to be seen as identical with the transformation of terrestrial mankind's twilight state to a sunlit existence. They are the death throes of the animal kingdom in the body of terrestrial human society and the incipient resurrection of the cosmic human kingdom on Earth. That these events have not been able to and will not come to pass entirely bloodlessly is quite natural as long as they are still identical with a fight that takes place in an area where hate, revenge and self-defense fight against slavery, hoarding and greed. A battlefield that is the scene of a reaction between such energies can produce only corpses. But over these corpses the world arises in a new transfigured form, and the earth becomes a vibration of intellect and love, a harmony of intuition and bliss.